I'm David Suchet, and this is Blood Ties.
For the last 17 years, we've been having lunch every Saturday, but now we bring you true crime stories from lockdown. This is Blood Ties. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wonsall, and I'm here with my father, Jeffrey Wonsall.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you so much for listening to Blood Ties. We are absolutely thrilled that you like it. We get such wonderful messages from our listeners and all around the world, which is, I can't tell you, is so comforting, especially in these really quite difficult times. Molly looks after the Instagram feed and reads me out examples of it on a regular basis. It's amazing.
Yeah, we had a good one this week, didn't we, from a lady from Dubai, and she sent us a picture of her dogs, which I thought was very jolly. Katie, and her dogs are called Bella and Joy. Hi, thanks so much for your message.
Yes, Katie, it was very kind of you. Apparently you listen to us while you're walking your dogs.
Yeah, exactly.
That's wonderful.
So, very nice.
I'm not sure.
Lots of people listen while they're on their walk, I think.
Do they?
Lots of people, yeah.
God, crikey. I
think so.
Well,
yeah.
All that sounds wonderful to me, and it's just so exciting to know that you enjoy it and you listen. Although sometimes I think, as Molly tells me off from time to time, I sometimes think it can be a bit gory. But
well, people say we handle it quite sensitively, considering, which is very flattering. Thank you all for those of you that say that.
Thank you very much. Absolutely. I'm afraid today's podcast is one that I have found very difficult.
Yeah, this is a really tough one.
But it deserves to be done, but it is not a comfortable one, I'm afraid. So that's a small health warning going in.
Yeah. Yes, very true. Very true. How have you been getting on this week, Dad?
Not bad, not bad. Yes, bits and bobs. Did some reviews, which were printed on Friday. Prepared this podcast. Looking forward to when we might be able to do one or two bits of filming again. Keeping my options open, as they say. But, yeah, pretty good. Pretty good, I'd say.
Good. Good-o. Pleased to hear that.
I haven't got too much lockdown fatigue yet, but it comes and goes. It gets waves of it sometimes.
Yeah, it goes in waves, doesn't it?
Yep.
I found this week pretty tough, but goes in waves, like you said.
Sometimes I actually found the week before harder. I think that was because I had two different crime stories, both of which were pretty ugly. And it became a sort of overwhelming in a way.
Yeah, it was a bit much that week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there is a danger in what I do and have been doing now for these years. You can be desensitized, and you mustn't allow that to happen. You've got to care and to tell the stories with some concern and some sympathy for the victims' families.
You do that, though.
Yeah, I'm pleased to say. Well, my darling.
Yes, I suppose we should get going. I don't think there isn't another title for our story today.
Not really.
It's just the story of Jamie Bulger.
It's the story of Jamie Bulger. James Patrick Bulger was born on the 16th of March 1990 in Kirby on Merseyside. When he sadly lost his life, he was still 2 years old. He would have been three a month later. It was a crime that literally shocked a nation. For little Jamie Bulger, and do look at his picture on the web, was a cheerful, smiling, open, charming little boy who had gone shopping with his mother Denise in the New Strand shopping centre in Bootle on the Friday afternoon of the 12th of February 1993. His mum had gone in to a butcher's shop on the ground floor of the shopping centre. And for a moment was distracted. How commonly does that happen? Mothers often get distracted. But what she could never have predicted is that her son would be abducted by 2 10-year-old boys. The boys were called Robert Thompson and John Venables. They were playing truant that day, as they did on a regular basis. And they were trawling through, and I know this sounds horrific to hear, they were trawling through the shopping centre looking for a victim. They tried to abduct another little boy before Jamie, but his mother returned and shooed them away. But shortly before 3:45 on that Friday afternoon in February, Thompson and Venables spied Jamie Bulger. Venables took Jamie's hand and Thompson led them through the shopping centre towards the main entrance. Denise looked round and couldn't find it, didn't know where he was, rushed out of the shop and turned left rather than right. Had she turned right, she would probably have caught up with them. Such are the way terrible decisions happen and awful things happen. The two boys originally intended to take the boy, their victim, and literally throw him under a car on the main road outside. But they decided that they wouldn't do that in the end. In passing, they'd actually been doing a little shoplifting in the shopping centre. They'd stolen some modelling paint, some blue modelling paint, some batteries, a troll doll. I mean, nothing really. But these boys then were, of course, spotted on CCTV. It's a memorable piece of footage which was shown repeatedly. It's timed 15:42 on that afternoon. First of all, for reasons one can only speculate about, they took the little boy, Jamie Bulger, to the nearby Leeds and Liverpool Canal, where they dropped him on his head and he suffered facial injuries. Not content with that, they then marched, or shall we say, walked with this little boy 2.5 miles across Liverpool to Walton, to very near indeed to the Walton police station. 38 people saw them, but only 2 stopped them. Thompson and Venables said that he was their younger brother. That was one story. Another one was, oh, we found him and he was lost. We're taking him to the police station. It literally defies belief. But what happened next is so horrifying that I can almost not bring myself to describe it, and I'm not going to go into enormous detail. But the two boys took... It should be said that Jamie Bulger was crying his eyes out for a great deal of this march across Liverpool. Literally, where's my... crying for his mother. I can't begin to understand what drove them to do this terrible deed. But then they drove him up a steep bank to the old railway line that runs... It's called... near the Walton and Anfield station, which is also close to Anfield Cemetery. Anyone who knows anything about football, and particularly Liverpool, will know that Anfield is a very significant place in the heart of Liverpudlians. On that Friday afternoon in February, These two 10-year-old boys proceeded to torture this 2-year-old boy. They stamped on him, kicked him, shoved batteries into his mouth, repeatedly threw the modelling paint they'd stolen into his eyes so it splattered him and indeed them. And finally, they dropped a 10 kilogram, 22-pound iron fish plate on his head. He had 10 skull fractures. He had a total of 42 injuries. It was impossible when he finally got to the pathologist to decide what had actually killed him. But even then, Thompson and Venables weren't finished. They put the little boy's now inert body on the railway line and weighted it with rubble. Their distorted logic was that perhaps it would look as if it was an accident and, nothing to do with them. I'm shaking my head. The little boy's body was cut in half by a train after they'd left him. In fact, his remains weren't discovered until 2 days later, Sunday, the 14th of February. It's a crime of such depravity, so monstrous, so indescribable, that it is, you can't explain it. You simply can't. These are 2 10-year-old boys. What possessed them? It is a question that has never properly been answered. There have been all sorts of allegations and suggestions that there was a sexual motive of some kind, but it's never been proved. It is undoubtedly true that the poor boy's shoes, socks, trousers and underpants were removed. But no other allegations. There's been no proof that there was anything more.
I remember at the time there being a lot of stories about it being to do with video games.
Yeah, so-called Child's Play 3 argument.
Yeah.
Well, it would be fair to say that Venables in particular had watched a video called Child's Play 3, which includes a monstrous doll called Chucky. It's also fair to say that they were both, as many boys were, growing up in a video game generation. We're talking about 1993. Was it a copycat? The police, when they were finally caught, looked at all the videotapes that the boys had watched and could find no example of anything like this. They weren't just copying something they'd seen on the screen. It came from somewhere else. Horrifying, though it is to think. Not surprisingly, there was an absolute outcry in Liverpool. The search for Jamie Bulger, which went on through the Friday night, all through the Saturday. The video of Thompson leading and Venables holding Jamie's hand was played again and again. And eventually it was slightly enhanced. Originally, it was believed that the two boys that had taken Jamie were much older, because how could they be so young? It defies belief. But then one local woman who knew that Thompson and Venables had a habit of truanting together recognised them from an enhanced version of the CCTV. And they were questioned and taken into custody by the police. They, at the start, denied anything to do with it. But There was a great deal of forensic evidence. There was blue paint on their clothes. There was blood on their shoes. There was marks on their shoes where they stamped on and kicked the poor little boy. And literally a matter of days later, they were both charged with the murder, abduction, and the earlier attempted abduction. Now comes another extraordinary element in this story. It was decided that rather than these two little boys be tried in a juvenile court, they should be tried in a full adult Crown Court at Preston. They couldn't see over the dock. They had to get little chairs so they could actually see the judge. It was a full hearing. Judge in full wig, barristers in wigs, gowns. They're removed from their parents because, of course, they've been kept on remand for all the period. Their parents, indeed, had to be relocated. There was such an outcry in Liverpool that this could have happened. And the parents weren't allowed to sit with them. They sat, each one, with a social worker. Can you imagine the scene? There's these two tiny boys. The police said afterwards, when they first knew, they couldn't believe how young they looked.
Yeah.
They thought they were looking for teenagers.
What did you remember about it at the time? Was it because of the public that they had to have a full, or because the crime was just so bad that they had to have adult court?
I think it's always been a matter of the gravest debate about whether that was the right decision. On a number of occasions, the case was actually taken to the European Court of Human Rights. In retrospect, and retrospect is always easy, I can't see why on earth they weren't tried in far less formal surroundings. That would happen now. They would not be subjected to a full adult court and trial. It would all be much more, much less formal. They would be allowed parental support. Throughout what was, to put it politely, the most harrowing of trials, and I've talked to two people who were there, my old friend Brian Masters went, this was as harrowing as the Moore's murder trial in 1966. People were changed forever by what they heard. But the forensic evidence in the end was absolutely pivotal. Neither Thompson nor Venables uttered a single syllable during the trial. It was all conducted around them. The first thing that had to be decided was, were they capable of understanding the difference between right and wrong? I would have thought a very good question.
It's a tricky one. It's a moral, ethical question.
It should be remembered that the age of criminal responsibility in Britain at that time was still 10. There have been those who've argued that it should go up to 12. And in the wake of this trial, that raised its head again. All right, if they're capable of knowing the difference between right and wrong, are they capable of understanding what's happening to them?
I don't know. All the significance of what they've done as well.
Well, shall we come back to that? Because it's a very, very important issue. In the end, inevitably, they were found guilty. And the judge called this a crime of unparalleled evil and brutality. Your conduct was both cunning and very wicked. He hoped that they would stay in custody for many, many years to come. At that point, they were still identified as Child A, Thompson, and Child B, Venables. But then the judge made a very, very controversial decision. He decided that it was in the public interest that they should be identified, effectively saying that they would never be able to live an ordinary life again because that crime was so heinous that the public deserved to know who they were. He recommended a minimum of 8 years. There was a long debate about how long they should serve. At one point, the Lord Chief Justice, Peter Taylor, raised that 8-year minimum to 10. The Home Secretary, Michael Howard, then raised it to 15 after it was a massive petition in The Sun, signed by 280,000 people, that they should be given longer.
Why did he give 8 years? Because that takes them to 18.
Yes. And I think he was presuming that they would then be transferred to an adult prison. In fact, they were sent to it. They're separated, of course. They had been separated since their arrest in two individual units. The point really is, was this British justice or was this a show trial because people were so appalled by the nature of the crime? Thompson and Venables couldn't really offer any substantial defence. And I think the sheer wickedness, the sheer brutality of what had been done to this poor little boy, I think deeply offended some people. But sadly, the story doesn't end there. The impact on the Bulger parents was enormous. They eventually separated. Denise married again. Thompson's parents were relocated. And a great argument, which went on for some years, about whether they should be released. Eventually, in 2001, 8 years after the offence, they were both judged a trivial risk to the public and their chances of rehabilitation were very high. And they were both released. Robert Thompson disappeared. He was given a new identity, of course, and new papers, new passport, new national insurance number, a medical history that wasn't his, a complete personality. And from that day to this, nothing has been heard of Robert Thompson. John Venables, on the other hand, struggled. I think it's undeniable that both would have suffered some form of post-traumatic stress simply from the incarceration. But Venables, I put it no higher, fell apart. There was drink, there was drugs. He had a lot of what were called very young girlfriends. He played a lot of video games. He was alleged in one report to have had a full-blown sexual relationship while he was still a prisoner. But that, again, was never confirmed. Even more horrifyingly, Venables had clearly developed an appetite for child pornography. In September 2008, 7 years after his release, he was arrested for a fray after a fight outside a nightclub. At this point, he wasn't in Merseyside, though he had been visiting Merseyside. Part of the order for his release meant that he should never go to Merseyside. And 3 months later, he got a curfew for cocaine possession. Then, in March 2010, he was sent back to prison. Eventually, it emerged that he was charged in June with possession of indecent images of children in the 12 months between February 2009 and February 2010. Venables pleaded guilty and was sent back to prison. In 2011, Venables was given another new identity, because by now he'd clearly been identified by the press. And in September 2013, he was released from prison, again on the assumption that he posed no threat to society. Sadly, it was a mistake. In February 2018, Venables pleaded guilty to possessing no fewer than more than 1,000 indecent images of children. And he was sentenced to 40 months further. That provoked an outcry. Jamie Bulger's mother, for example, said it's an outrageous short sentence. But the sentence stood. And in April 2020, Venables appealed for parole again. The parole is delayed, the hearing is delayed because of the coronavirus outbreak. All parole hearings are very badly delayed. Now, I'd be very interested to hear, Molly, what your reaction to this and where you think the moral issues are, because you're very good at that.
I don't think I am that good at it, otherwise I would have got into Oxford when they asked me all those moral questions in my interview. Ethical questions.
Did they know the difference between right and wrong?
I think there is a difference between knowing what right and wrong is and not fully comprehending the result of your actions. I genuinely believe that when young people in gangs, for example, are having to prove themselves by shooting or stabbing someone, when young people get themselves, and I mean older than them, but young people, say, even up to the age of 25, for example, get themselves into a position where they may have murdered someone, assaulted someone, etc. I don't think that they fully comprehend what that actually means, like what that means moving forward. You know, when you watch programs about people in prison, you know, if you're 18 and you get put away for life and you're in prison for 45 years or however long you're in prison for, I don't think you think about that when you're doing whatever the thing is that you're doing. I don't think you... Yeah, so I don't think age 10, even though you are conscious you're doing something bad, I'm sure that they knew what they were doing was bad.
Okay.
I'm not sure that they necessarily understood
the consequences.
How bad. Yeah. Well, and the consequences. And the consequences, I don't just mean is they'll be punished. I mean the consequences of taking someone's life, of inflicting that kind of, what that means for them, what that means for their families, what that means, you know.
Well, I agree with that. And it was very significant that when Thompson was first interrogated, he said to the police, "Have they taken the boy to hospital to get him alive again?" It's a chilling remark.
Yeah. I just don't think that you know at that age what the severity of death is. Mm. I don't think you understand it.
Well,
you know, and you've no idea what their... You don't know what moral compass has been set for them growing up. You don't know what they've seen at home or what's said to be right or wrong. You don't know.
No.
So it's like, of course, your compass for right and wrong is determined by what you see around you and what you're brought up with. And additionally, you can also be kind of cajoled down a path of doing stuff that's wrong when you're young without really realising it.
It was always said at the time that Thompson was the leader and Venables was the follower. Subsequent events may actually cast that in a different light. And indeed, at one point in Venables' interviews with the police, he said that Jamie seemed to like me. That's why he held my hand.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think you can't really speculate. You know, I just think it's like two young boys going down, doing something, not realising just not realizing what the significance of it is. Like the fact that Venables has, you know, struggled to recover and has, you know, the, you know, child pornography and that kind of thing, it's too difficult to say whether that's embedded or whether that's a result of what he did as well. It's too difficult to distinguish the two things.
I would agree with that. Okay, let's put that question to one side. Should they have been tried in an adult criminal court?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think they would be today.
I don't think that's the way to get the information that you need out of two children. In order to get them to talk about what they've done or to try and understand things, you can't put them. They're obviously not you just can't do that to children. They don't understand children.
Yes.
So I understand the argument, because how do you distinguish between an adult crime committed by a child? But I think you have to look at that thing, which is like how much it's not. I don't think that's the right way of looking at it. Do you know the difference between right and wrong? Do you understand the consequences of your actions? Okay. Do you understand what you did? Do you understand what this means? Like, you know, and I don't think that they did understand that. I don't think you do understand stuff like that when you're little.
Let me pose the last of my three moral questions.
Mm.
Did we as a society help them? Did we rehabilitate them?
No. But I don't think I blame society for that either. The fact that there would be a witch hunt after those two boys is of no surprise to me. You can't, you know, that's when you need to look at the press and the judicial system. You know, it's the people who make the decisions and the people who put information out there that are the one, you know, if the society is hugely shocked and upset by something, that's, you know, what are we witnessing right now? The, you know, poor man who lost his life in Minnesota, you know, the world is up in arms, and quite rightly. Yeah. And that they're totally justified in feeling that. The world's reaction to something is, you have to allow that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
it would be fair to say that there has been a much debate about giving Venables two and arguably now three new identities. A lot of people have posed horrible, gruesome things on, you know, social media. People pretending to be Venables. I mean, it's 27 years ago, but this crime is still vivid in people's minds, and it still attracts enormous attention. Personally, I wouldn't have lifted the confidentiality around their identity.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But maybe that's just me with the benefit of hindsight. I think it made them targets, and I don't think Venables ever really recovered. And I don't think he's going to recover very easily now. Two 11-year-old boys, when they were actually sentenced, they were 11. Spent 8 years incarcerated, almost all of it in individual cells. I think it scars people beyond words, but this is a really complicated and nuanced case.
I also think that the actions of what they did will have scarred them. You know, that's one of the things I often think about is like, you know, what they did, you know, what you do, those things, they never leave you, right? You have to have a very certain type of mind to be able to shut those things out. And I think potentially if you're a psychopath or, you know, you're older and you're making these decisions, you're choosing to do them and you control them, the thoughts and the way you have the thoughts. But if you're a child, you can't control those. That will never leave you. So... Mm-hmm. You know, to have the mental capability to kind of work through that, plus being in prison, you know, it's very difficult to see without help, you know, especially if you don't have the right frame of mind, how you would recover, not just from the incarceration and not from but actually just from what you did,
yes.
Which is a whole different thing.
Well, it's said, and again, we don't know, It's said that Venables in particular suffered from very acute nightmares about what had happened. I don't know. Was that one of the reasons, for example, that he turned to drugs so quickly? I don't know. But he's clearly a very traumatised young man. So I think, darling, that calls for something a bit more cheerful, don't you? I mean,
yeah. Well, thank you, Dad. I think it is a really important one, and good to do. And the story of Jamie Bulger. Yes. Have you got something jolly to tell us?
not after telling you about Jamie Bulger's poor Jamie Bulger. Goodness me. And you know, and also I think his mum, who has written a book about it, very moving actually, berating herself for, you know, losing contact with him and allowing him to be taken away. I've always thought the interesting thing for me, and just as a way of reflection, is that they went there searching for a target and they attempted one before they got to Jamie Bulger.
Yeah.
And it then tempts you back up that old conversation, the nature of evil. But that's not a cheerful ending. So let's think about something cheerful. It's coming up to the beginning of June. It's going to be a lovely summer, which we won't be able to enjoy. We won't be able to go out. I can only meet you in a park. I can only meet you in the park, 2 meters apart.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to make do with that.
It's
the best we can do.
Yeah. But it's better than not being able to meet you in a park.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
well, it's lovely weather, and that's very nice.
Yeah, and I've read some really good books too. Really, very interesting one by an actor called Dougald Bruce Lockhart, called The Lizard, which is about a young man who's an undergraduate at St Andrews University. And breaks up with his girlfriend and is heartbroken and decides to take himself off to the Greek islands for the summer, and then proceeds to fall into the most terrible troubles. he meets up with an Australian, a wily Australian, on the ferry from Athens, who proceeds to steal his passport and his identity and all that, gets him drunk. Oh, it's not perhaps a beach read, but it's very good at evoking the Greek islands and taking you away from, you know, if you happen to be trapped in a city in Britain. It's got a lot of very nice things. But
sounds like a good one.
It is a great fun. It's great fun. And it's a great debut. He's not a bad actor either, actually. He's trained at RADA. And it's got touring parts. I think he played Michael Gove in a play about Boris at the Finsbury Park. And it's talented. I genuinely think it's talented. And there are high spots.
And moments of escapism.
Yeah, and I wake up very early in the morning and I always start reading, because I can then transport myself away from remembering that actually I've got to wash my hands another 6 times and clean my glasses and whatever else. I bought 2 masks yesterday. First time I have.
Oh, did you? Well done.
Yeah, I bought 2 masks in an effort not to be completely out of step. But I haven't put them on yet. I haven't tried them on yet. But they're very good. Okay. I got them from my local chemist, pharmacist, who's a very nice man and who always gives me very good advice. So there
Excellent.
You are.
Well done.
So when we do meet in the park, 2 metres apart, I should be wearing my mask.
You will wear your mask.
Yes, but you'll be able to recognise me because of my glasses.
Okay. I mean, I think I'd recognise you anyway. Very good.
Anyway, darling, but I think you've got
you
to
need
put
to wear your mask when you go to the shops, Dad. You should have worn it in the supermarket. That's the key. You need to wear them inside. I think that's the
well,
the
I went
general
to,
advice.
I went to 3 shops yesterday. I went to my paper shop to Xerox my VAT return. I went to the chemist and I went to the convenience store. No people behind the counter, no one was wearing a mask.
No, I know, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't wear a mask if you want to. But yes, I agree with you. I mean, I don't because no one else does, but that's not exactly the best advice, I don't think.
Well, yeah. Anyway, I'm trying to put a good...
You're doing very well.
A good...
Stay positive.
I'm trying to stay as positive as possible. I hope you will too.
Yes, definitely.
All this week.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Dad, and thank you to all the people who help us. Thank you to Audio Boom for hosting us, our producer Poppy Damon, who somehow magically makes these two recorded bits sync together and makes it all possible. To my brother Dan, who does our music, and my friend George, who drew our caricature. To Jeffrey for all of his hard work, and to you, the listeners, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much, and as I often say, bad things happen to good people, so please, please do be careful out there.